Everyone, welcome to the Thursday, April 9th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And we are going to take our bills in the order they are on the agenda. That means that I will start by opening a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2037. Erin, would you please tell us about this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2037 reorganizes the Oregon State Capital Foundation as a nonprofit corporation. It authorizes the foundation to establish reasonably prudent funds and accounts to engage in education and advice to promote policies and objectives of foundation. It directs the legislative administrator to provide meeting space and administrative support to the foundation. There is an emergency clause on the measure. It does come to you from your House with 58 aye votes and 2 members were excused. There is a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact on the measure.
And it looks like we have Fred Neal signed up to testify. Would you like to come forward? Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Fred Neal, Chair of the Oregon State Capital Foundation. I'm here today to urge your support of House Bill 2037. It clarifies, as staff pointed out, the responsibilities and organizational structure of the foundation while keeping us still appointed by the legislature under 173-500, ORS 173-500, and the same roles and responsibilities to advise you and on the building and improvements to be made to it and to preserve and protect the building and to be responsible for the history gateway and ensuring that there is some representation of Oregon's history and its legislative history and the building's history here in the building to instill confidence and interest in Oregon's democracy and in the building. We will still have all those responsibilities, but we would clarify that we have a separate 501c3 that although our membership is appointed by the legislature, we would run our own rules and our own accounting and file with the IRS, et cetera, without having the extant confusion that perplexes not just us, but the legislative administrator, legislative council, and others of having two organizations, one the advisory committee and the other the 501c3. And so we've worked this out with Dexter Johnson and Kevin Hayden. The administrator under the bill is still responsible for providing us administrative support and facilities, a room space. We're not quite sure what that entails because we know we're going to have to go out and get our own liability insurance, for instance, so we can cover Senator Farrelly as he in his service as a member of our board of directors and others.
The maximum available.
But we think this is the right step to take in order to ensure that we can strengthen our fundraising ability and ensure our integrity as a 501c3 to assist you in the future.
Great. Okay. Any questions for Mr. Neal, Senator Boquist? Yes,
thank you, Madam Chair. Just to get, I guess, a few things on the record so we have it.
Yes, please.
Could you, and I noticed the bill's been obviously in, the whole plan for reorganization has been around for a while. It says pre-session filed. So what was the process that led up to the reorganization? And then maybe you could give us just a little bit of history about the existing foundation, because I know I gave money back in 2005, 2007. I mean, it's been around for a long time. We put the walk of flags out here. Could you just give a little hiss for the background?
Oh, I'd be
history?
Very happy to.
I mean, for some reason, there's people who think this just kind of happened in the dark of the night and came out of nowhere. And so I'm just giving you the opportunity to promote the Capital Foundation.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Boquist, to answer your question as briefly as I can, we have been around for a number of years, and the initial prospector was to simply be an advisory committee to the Legislative Administration Committee. Our appointments are by LAC, other than the legislative members who are appointed by the leadership. We had some funds with state treasury, and we had, when we were trying to raise money for the Walk the Flags and the Medal of Honor monuments at the flag stanchions, it became apparent that some people didn't want to donate to the state of Oregon. They write a check out to the state of Oregon. They would rather write it out to some other entity. And And so we had permission, the legislature then, I think in 2009, amended the statutes to allow us to create a 501c3. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, so we did that with a former representative and our legal counsel at the time, Lou Hampton, to file with the IRS and Artists of Incorporation. We got a permit to do that as a supportive organization to the foundation, the foundation being statutory. Mm-hmm. So it was called the Fund for Mm-hmm. the Oregon State Capital Foundation. And so we've got a board of directors there, former State Senator Jane Cease is now the president of the fund board, and I'm chair of the foundation membership. And we try to run not coterminous meetings, but meetings in sequence so that budget decisions and expenditures can be authorized by both entities, and we keep separate minutes and and all of that. And it's a little confusing. And in consult, the members, some of them involved with 501c3s for some time, Norm Smith and others, said, let's try to simplify this. And so I started meetings with Mr. Johnson and Mr. Hayden, and this is what we've come up with after consultation with the Miller Nash firm as well, who are our agents of record for the 501c3. Mm-hmm. We still are actively involved in improving the visitor experience at the Capitol, making sure that the gateway informs and inspires students and other visitors to the Capitol about being involved in the state government and caring about the Capitol and what goes on in it. As Jane C. says, democracy is not a spectator sport, and we try to make that, press that point home. We appreciate use of the half of the proceeds of the Pacific Wonderland license plates, and those help to fund the gateway, and we're hoping also to broaden the use of those funds, and that will be going to, that bill will be going to you, to the Senate floor shortly, mm-hmm. from Senate Finance and Revenue, per your motion, Senator.
Right, I'm guilty. I did it.
And we're looking forward to renovation of the Capitol and having a site dedicated mm-hmm. to a history center in the revived and revived Capitol, and participating in making sure that the historic nature of the building is preserved, as well as that any new public spaces that come out of that renovation project are inspirational to visitors and carry out the, continue the good, wonderful qualities that we find this building to contain.
Just a quick follow-up.
Sure, follow-up.
And appreciate the volunteers, but I mean, maybe for the record, I mean, there's a whole host, because it's a volunteer organization, a whole host of citizen volunteers that have been doing this, participating. You look around the room right here, and then there's a whole host of, you know, private sector and private sector fundraising. Am I right here? Is that a correct statement?
We have...
Foundation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Boquist. We bit the bullet here a year and a half ago and came up with a development plan mm-hmm. and made the commitment that we would make a not minor expenditure of our operational funds, the non-Pacific Wonderland license plates, to retain a development consultant and develop a development plan, mm-hmm. Which we are halfway through. You've gotten some correspondence about it. You'll be getting several more letters in the next several months as we embark on really rolling this out after having developed a refined database. We're still trying to eliminate duplicates and all of that. And then we also have decided, made a determination at our last meeting last week that we would initiate and roll out an endowment plan to try and build an endowment in addition to ongoing annual expenditures.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, well, thank you very much for your testimony.
I might also add that you are all welcome to purchase Pacific Wonderland license plates, and you are welcome to mention the Oregon State Capitol Foundation and any legacy you wish to leave.
Thank you very much for that as well. And I did want to acknowledge that former State Senator Jane Cease, who's been very active as a member And I don't know, are you the chair currently or no? But very active on this, is here in our audience. And so thank you for being here too. Okay, so we are in a, possible work session.
I could make a possible motion.
Would you like to make a possible motion?
If you open a more than possible work session.
Okay, how about if I open an actual work session?
I would make an actual motion then, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I actually move House Bill 2037 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Farioli moves House Bill 2037 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. Senator Farioli, I think you're the only member of this committee that's actually a member of the Capitol Foundation.
So the short straw falls to me.
I think that would be great.
Madam Chair, may I interrupt your train of thought for a moment?
Yes, please do.
Senator Beyer had his hand up.
Senator Beyer,
I did see his hand up.
I'm fine.
Yeah, Senator Farioli, thank you for volunteering, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2037. And I'll open a public hearing and possible work session. I'll just open a public hearing on Senate Bill 942. And Erin, would you please tell us about this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 942 directs Oregon State Capitol Foundation to undertake fundraising and commission of statues of Chief Joseph and Abigail Scott Dunaway to be placed in National Statuary Hall in United States Capitol. There is a no revenue impact. A fiscal impact statement was issued on the measure for you.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. And I think we'll start by calling Carrie Timchuk. And friend? Good afternoon, gentlemen, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jerry Hudson, and it was my privilege to serve as the chairman of the Statuary Hall Advisory Commission. I'm going to briefly summarize the recommendations of the commission. And Carrie will then, who served as an advisor to the commission, will briefly summarize the steps that remain to be done in the future. I also would mention that two other commissioners from the Statuary Hall Commission are in the audience, Darlene Cooley and Margaret Carter, and we acknowledge their helpful participation. As you know, the commission was created last August by executive order and was charged with studying and recommending to the 2015 legislature whether to replace one of Oregon's statues in the National Statuary Hall collection in the United States Capitol. And if a replacement is recommended, which Oregonian should be newly memorialized in the National Statuary Hall collection? Five members of this commission were appointed by the governor, two by the president of the Senate, and two by the Speaker of the House. And in the fulfilling of our charge, the commission consulted with a number of Oregon historians and scholars. We held four public meetings at which we heard testimony from dozens of Oregonians. We received input from thousands of Oregonians through the website hosted by the Oregon Historical Society. The first decision that the commission addressed was the question of whether the statues of Dr. John McLaughlin and Reverend Jason Lee should remain as Oregon's representatives in Statuary Hall. After studying the issue and listening to testimony, the commission unanimously voted to return these statues to places of honor in Oregon. This recommendation in no sense diminishes the importance and influential roles that these two individuals played in the path that led to Oregon's statehood. Rather, it was the commission's belief that the more than a century and a half since McLaughlin and Lee's passing, much more Oregon history has been written, and that there are opportunities to send statues of two equally worthy individuals to represent different chapters in Oregon's history. After receiving a number of recommendations from scholars Oregon historians, the commission narrowed the list of possible replacements to 10 individuals, And then with the help of public input, we chose four very worthy finalists to be researched further. Those four were Chief Joseph, Abigail Scott Dunaway, Tom McCall, and Mark Hatfield. At our final meeting on March 4th, the commission heard presentations and testimony, took a final vote, with each commissioner voting for two individuals that they would like to recommend to the legislature. Based on a very close vote, our final recommendations to the legislature was that a statue memorializing Chief Joseph be installed in National Statuary Hall. The vote was Chief Joseph received 7 votes, Abigail Scott Dunaway received 6 votes, Senator Hatfield received 5 votes. So following that recommendation, we then made the proposal that Chief Joseph be installed to replace the statue of Jason Lee, and that a statue of Abigail Scott Dunaway be installed to replace the statue of John McLaughlin. According to the federal legislation, this can't be done in twos. It must be done one at a time, and that would be a matter of decision reached by the legislature. We don't view these changes as a removal, but a rotation of Oregon experience. As Oregon experience change, we go through various chapters in our history. We view this as a second chapter in Oregon's impressive history, and as time goes by, I'm certain that there will be other opportunities in the future to recognize the contributions of others as we go through later chapters of our history. Some of you probably are aware that there was an article this Monday in the New York Times about similar action being taken by our neighbors to the south in the state of California. A few years ago, California became one of the first states to replace a statue. They replaced the statue of Thomas Starr King with one honoring Ronald Reagan. And this week, the California legislature is voting on replacing the statue of Father Serra, the 18th century Catholic priest who founded the missions in California, with a statue honoring Dr. Sally Ride, the first female astronaut who blasted into space in 1983. The commission was also charged with by Executive Order 14-11 with recommending a suitable place of honor for any statues returning to Oregon. Given the fact that such a recommendation, should our recommendations be enacted into law, the process of fundraising and creation of the statues is one of the things that's likely to take more than a year. In some states, it's taken at least 3 or 4 years to accomplish the changes. This commission recommends that the responsibility for further implementation be delegated, if the legislature decides so, to an official commission such as the Oregon Heritage Commission. And finally, on behalf of myself and my 8 colleagues, we express appreciation for being asked to serve our state in this way. We watch with great interest to the legislature's action in considering our recommendations. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And Madam Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Kerry Timchuk. It's my privilege to serve as Executive Director of the Oregon Historical Society. And at the request of the governor, I also served as a thankfully non-voting advisor to the Statuary Hall Study Commission. Chair Hudson has reported on the work of the commission. As he said, I'd like to offer a brief summary of what remains to be accomplished if the commission's recommendation is to be implemented. In accordance with legislation enacted by the United States Congress in 2000, Any state may request the Joint Committee of the Library of Congress to approve the replacement of a statue the state has provided for display in Statuary Hall under 2 conditions. First, the request has been approved by a resolution adopted by the legislature of the state, and the request has been approved by the governor of the state. It's the next step, of course. And second, the statue to be replaced has been displayed in the Capitol for at least 10 years at the time the request was made. The statues of John McLaughlin and Jason Lee have stood in the Capitol since 1953, so the second condition clearly has been met. Federal regulations further define the steps that need to be taken in this matter, and requires that you, the state legislator, enact a resolution that identifies the statue to be replaced, names the individual to be newly commemorated, cites his or her qualifications, selects a committee or commission to represent the state in selecting the sculptor, and directs the method of obtaining the necessary funds to carry the resolution into effect. Expenditures for which the state is solely responsible include the cost of paying the sculptor, carving or casting the statue, creating the pedestal and any desired inscription, transporting the statue and pedestal to the Capitol, removing and transporting the replaced statues, temporarily erecting the new statue in the rotunda of the Capitol for the unveiling ceremony, paying for the unveiling ceremony, and any other expenses that the state commission may find it necessary to incur. The state then sends a letter from a duly authorized state official with a copy of the legislation approved by the governor to the architect of the Capitol, who will then inform the Joint Committee on the Library that the state wishes to replace a given statue. The Joint Committee on the Library then approves or denies a request. Up to this time, they've approved all requests made by the state since 2000 for replacing a statue. Assuming it is approved, the architect then will formalize an agreement with the state to guide the process, which will include the state's commitment to follow very specific guidelines for the design and fabrication of the statue, which includes specific requirements as to the material, size, and weight, to take responsibility for the costs, and to submit photographs of the statue at various points of its creation. We are dealing with the federal government here, so you can imagine what you're going through. Perhaps the most important question going forward that remains to be decided is the matter of financial responsibility. A number of states, including Kansas, Ohio, Michigan, and California, have replaced statues in the last decade. In some instances, the state government has incurred and paid for all the costs. In other instances, these costs were paid for by outside entities. Perhaps the most interesting example is that of Kansas, where the legislature adopted legislation, as Oregon is proposing, replacing both of its previous statues with statues, one of Dwight Eisenhower and two of Amelia Earhart. The responsibility for funding the Eisenhower statue was given to the Eisenhower Foundation in Kansas, which has quickly completed its job and the statue has been erected. This responsibility for the Earhart statue was assigned to the city of Atchison and the Atchison Chamber of Commerce. And that statue still is not in the Capitol. And the legislation did say that any secondary responsibility, if someone failed to do the job, would go to the Kansas Department of Commerce and Housing. I know that the bill before you mentions the Oregon State Capitol Foundation, and I know that it's a responsibility that they are reluctant to embark on, as would be, I think, any nonprofit, including the Oregon Historical Society. Our primary duty, obviously, is to raise operating funds to allow us to operate and to embark for the Capitol Foundation or other nonprofit. This is a major fundraising process. You need a development director, you need a full-time staff, you need letters, you need letterhead. You need lots of things going on to raise the money. I would suggest, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, humbly suggest that perhaps a working group be put together at some point to brainstorm ideas on the proper ways to raise funds. You know, just talking off the top of my head, a license plate for Chief Joseph and a license plate for Abigail Scott Dunaway might be a way to raise some funds. Back in the 1920s and 30s, when first Lee McLaughlin proposed, school kids gave dimes and nickels to raise money for statues. Looking at what other states have done, it's talking, you know, for two statues, probably $1 million project. By the time you, you know, get an artist and a sculptor and the material and the transportation and everything that's needed to be done. So I'm free to offer any assistance you might have, and as I said, a working group put together with other commissioners, with Mr. Neal of the Capitol Foundation, with members of this committee, as you search for a way to fund this, if you choose not to fund it through a direct state appropriation.
Okay. Thank you both for your testimony. Any questions? Senator Boquist.
Thank you. Kerry, just to refer, I didn't catch all the notes because he was speaking too fast there. Just to recap here, I mean, basically, it's been a year-long process for the commission. It was online for months and months on end. I mean,
correct.
And so, I mean, this is, you couldn't get much wider input other than sitting in a hearing room at this point, which we don't get much input.
No.
Is that correct?
A lot of input through the website at OHS, which provided a public vote. There was public voting throughout the process, and stories in the newspapers and on television news. And
hey, thank you very much.
You bet.
Question, we'll take your free labor for the $20
million. Yes, Senator Ferriero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to echo the appreciation of my colleagues. This 8-board commission probably undertook no more rigorous or difficult decision for this activity than they ever have done, because I followed the activity and the echoes in this building. There was quite a cross current of advocacy in various directions. So I know that the final selection was not an easy selection to make. Would you care to talk about the rigor with which folks advocated for their selections, or even the idea of replacing our statues and statuary hall?
I think you've certainly correctly identified the fact that there were strong, strong feelings by a great number of people. And it's understandable. We're talking about individuals who have different views about the contributions of many, and they feel very strongly about it. And I think we were very aware of the need to be open-minded in hearing what someone and respecting what someone would have to say. If I had known everything that I know now about that, I'm not sure I would have been as anxious to have accepted the invitation to serve as the chair. But it was an enlightening and, I think, productive experience. And it was reassuring how strongly people felt about it. I hope we were able to alleviate the fears that somehow we were denigrating the tremendous contributions of people in the past, but recognizing that our state has gone through a number of chapters and will continue to go through that indefinitely, and there probably will be other chapters and other recommendations later on. I think one has to weigh that against the obvious expense that's involved in making changes, and so you wouldn't want to do, I think, changes every 10 years as is the minimum requirement that each statue must remain at least 10 years. But certainly a half century or some period of time would be a reasonable opportunity to renew what the next chapter might bring.
Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
Thank you for the effort, and please convey that thanks to all the other members of the commission. And what I hear in your words is that the proper way to communicate that the accession of different statuaries and statuary hall gives us the opportunity to pay homage to Dr. John McLaughlin and the Right Reverend Jason Lee here in Oregon, and how this is received by the public, I think, Madam Chair, will be determined by how respectfully we treat the placement of those veterans of Statuary Hall in our own state if we decide to go forward with this. So that's yet another challenge, and possibly as great as the challenge that will be faced in execution that you've described.
I think we will find a number of groups and special interest wanting to show that kind of respect, and so it won't be, I think, difficult to find suitable places where that can be done. I can no longer speak for Willamette University, but obviously we have at Willamette University a high regard for Jason Lee because he was the founder of the university. There are other places that have shown great interest in both of these individuals. So I don't think that will... There may be some internal intramural quarrels about which one should receive it, and that will have to be a decision made, I think, in effect by the legislature. But
I agree with you.
Madam Chair, I think that is a similar situation. Dr. John McLaughlin.
You know,
one of the obvious places would be Oregon City, but there could be many communities, you know, from Shampooey north to the shores of Stumptown,
yeah,
where Dr. McLaughlin left his footprints.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And for the record, Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly has mentioned the efforts of the Commission. And just for the record, I wanted to share with you, along with the ones you've met, Chairman Hudson, Vice Chair Hooley, Senator Margaret Carter, the other members of the Commission were Robert Taylor, the Assistant Secretary of State for Oregon, Patsy Smullen of Medford, Oregon, Bobby Connor of Pimelton, Oregon, Bridget McConville of Warm Springs, Oregon, Susan Castillo of Portland, Oregon, and former Congresswoman Elizabeth First of Hillsborough were the nine members of the panel. And if there is some sort of working group forum to work, I would recommend that Kyle Janssen, who's here, who runs the Oregon Heritage Commission, he would be a good member to be involved, too, as we study ways to fund the placement of the statues, if that's what the legislature wishes to do.
Okay. Well, we certainly want to thank all the members and also especially thank the members that showed up today, including Congresswoman Hooley and former Senator Margaret Carter, who are here with us. I don't know if there are any other members that are actually here.
But
thank you for being here, and thank you all for all of that work.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any other questions for you, so we will thank you again for your testimony and let you go. And I do see that we've now been joined by the Senate President, Peter Courtney. Is he still here? Yes. Would you like to come forward?
Counsel, he gets a big piece of paper, and we got to read four print.
Good afternoon, Senator Courtney. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Priori, Senator Burdick, and Senator Boquist, Senator Baum. My name is Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator from District 11, which includes portions of Salem, actually includes this building, as well as portions of on up through I-5, Jervis, Brooks, and Woodburn. I really, I went back and forth even as recently as a few moments ago when I said, all right, it's time. You need to probably go down, Peter, and say something because you owe it to Jerry Hudson and the Darlene Hooley and Bridget McConville. You owe it to Patsy Smullen as well as Margaret Carter, Robert Taylor, Gail Castillo, Bobby Connor, as well as Elizabeth First. And you owe it as well to memory and the legacy, the families of Dr. John McLaughlin, Reverend Jason Lee, as well as to the late Governor Tom McCall, and of course the State Representative and State Senator and Secretary of State, Governor, as well as U.S. Senator Mark Hatfield, to say something, because I don't know, and I don't mean this in any kind of egotistical way, I'm not sure that this would be, we'd be here today in this form or this way if for some reason I hadn't decided, I think in the last session, general session, that if we were going to look at the replacement of one of the statutes back in the Statutory Hall of the United States Congress, that we should do it with following a vigorous process. And the bill was introduced in that session by me outlining a process that should be followed. And the subject matter of 942 and the reason I'm here is to discuss that process, because there are those that have already studied and spoken to and will speak about the role of Chief Joseph and Abigail Scott Duniway to our history of our people, our state, and our civilization, as well as speak about the contributions of the late Tom McCall, as well as the beloved and honorable Mark Hatfield. And I don't know I don't know how you do this. You must do this in a way for Peter that you did. In no way anything that's done or has been done or will be done should be seen as discrediting or disrespecting at any given individual, be it an individual whose statute is now in the hall representing our great state or a statute that may be in the hall or an individual that was considered to be in that famous hall. I find it interesting that, wouldn't you know, that this all began with a state that put the first statute way back in 1870, and wouldn't you know, the state was Rhode Island. I didn't know that. I find that most remarkable because Rhode Island's flag, which stands in the row of flags outside, if you look at the base of it, the individual's name who appears for having bought the two-flavored flag was Peter Courtney. So I didn't know that Rhode Island, the state I lived in before I came here in 1969, it was that state that put the first statute there. And I am told that it's the great state of Oregon that was the state that put the last statute of the two of all 50 states back there was the state of Oregon. So here I am feeling sort of betwixt and between two states. And I could go on and on about the history of this, and I had no idea I was going to get into this thing this way. But I do want to point out that I cannot be more proud of this group of individuals, of great Oregonians, who have vigorously looked at this issue. And after it already has been indoctrinated by the president of all Willamette University, probably one of the great of all time presidents of Willamette University, Jerry Hudson, and his group, to look at this group of individuals and make these recommendations. So I felt, my staff said to me, you're going down there and testify, Peter. You owe it to somebody to do that because you, in fact, started the process, if nothing else. And I didn't do it unilaterally. And I actually thought we'd do it through legislation that we would say this process should be followed, but it was an executive order that created the process. So I came down to thank individuals who were willing to go through this vigorous examination. They totally caught me by surprise. I was stunned when I started to hear about these recommendations. This is so creative, but it's also so Oregon that she would look at her history this way with these two individuals, but at the same time coming up with the concept, and maybe it was always there, that every generation should look at these statutes. And a generation, and I don't know if I'm certified smart enough to say this, my staff said to me, you should use 50 years. Now, I don't know what that, if 50 years, my fellow senators, is a generation or not. I get lost because there's so many generations now between me and my sons, and I just get lost because I'm so old. But I'm told that 50 years is the time. And so other states, I don't know if they're looking at it the way we are. They just have come up with individuals, and I don't mean disrespectful. I'm looking at, I have a list of here the different states that have already chosen to change the statute, but also ones that are looking at it and the individuals. Whereas this group of individuals, in a very learned academic way, perhaps that's what you do when your leader is the president of an extraordinary academic institution for so many years right across the street, Dr. Jerry Hudson, that you do it on a generational basis, and that you do it recognizing there are different historical figures throughout your history, as always is the case, because no state is able to accomplish what she does without an incredible number of individuals along the way, as well as different cultures along the way. And that's what's so beautiful about this recommendation. But again, I want to be very sensitive to our past. I want to be very sensitive to where we are today and where we'll be tomorrow. And I think it's interesting, I'm now before the committee, which in some ways, your rules committees, in my view of the legislature, often considered the most esteemed and powerful. And when I look at the individuals on this committee and the different worlds you just represent, I think it's only fitting that these rules committee be the one that receives the recommendation and the work from this commission. So I had written testimony. It's all beautifully put together for me. But I'm not going to read it because it's just not the way I do things. I don't want to just bury my eyes in these words, which are on huge print and huge pages for reasons you all understand, and that's embarrassing in itself. But I finally came down, I'm not looking for anything except I feel, I don't know whether it's out of guilt or what, that I feel that I owe it to the individuals, some of whom are sitting in the room, as well as to the members of this committee, as well as to where Oregon is, to say, okay, this is an Oregon process done in an Oregon way, incredible recommendation in terms of who they are, what they are, and what they capture. You will do with it what you will, individually and collectively, because the wisdom of the committee will work whatever way it wants to on this. I hope you consider it to be a worthy mission that you've been asked to go on. I hope you consider this to be extraordinary legislation that's in front of you by an extraordinary group of people, asking you to do something in a historical way for Oregon's past, her present, her future. With that, I think I've talked long enough. I can't say I feel any better than I did when I came in the room because I was so nervous. I mean, really nervous, really nervous. I don't know why I'm so nervous, but I'm very nervous. But I haven't meant to discredit anyone by coming here or put down anyone or be disrespectful of anyone, both in the past or present. Rather, I hope this is seen as a very constructive, positive exercise, beautiful process, beautiful people have participated. I hope it's considered a good moment.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts and the work that went into this, and we appreciate you being with us today. Any questions? Yes, Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair and President Cornyn, I just want to know, we're so esteemed, they gave your testimony to us in 6 font.
That's just really great. That's great.
Thanks for that comment. Senator Boquist, Senator Ferriola.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Even though this is the first opportunity, perhaps not the only opportunity, that the President will appear before our committee, in deference to his nervousness, I will not ask this witness to be placed under oath. Although that is my prerogative. But I will ask the good president, to share with us the musings of our neighboring state governor, C.L. Butch Otter, whose letter I hold, who contests the I'll ask the president to characterize that letter, if you will.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Ferriola, you all do realize that Senator Ferriola is a historic figure in that he is the not only the longest serving Republican leader in Oregon history, maybe the longest serving caucus leader ever in Oregon's history. So he is a historic figure unto himself, as well as in Oregon's history. That letter was, are you familiar with the letter that he's talking about? Is everyone familiar with this letter, or is this not something you're familiar with? Are you familiar with it?
I do not have a copy of the letter.
So you're not familiar with it, Chair?
I've heard of it, but I have not seen it until just now.
You asked, can I ask the good senator a question, Chair Rosenbaum?
Yes, you may.
Are you asking my reaction to it or my view of what it says? I mean, Senator, I'm not trying to be a fool. What are you asking me?
Well, Madam Chair, in fairness to the committee, it is a letter from Governor Butch Otter that simply suggests that Idaho has a greater historical claim to Chief Joseph than the state of Oregon does, and I simply wondered if the president had an opinion about Oregon lagging behind in this race, to have enshrined Chief Joseph in Statuary Hall, since the governor of Idaho is clearly asking to make a reservation for the Idaho's ability to someday put enshrined Chief Joseph in Statuary Hall. And
I'm on revenue and finance. We can fix that.
And I just wondered if he had any wisdom or words of reaction to that concept.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator, if I had to live my life over again, and I often wish I could in a lot of ways I'm not totally unhappy with what's happened to me in my life. My academic degrees, I have 3 academic degrees. I'm not bragging about that. I spent a lot of years in college. I would change certain things and have a PhD in history. I would not have gone on and gotten a master's degree in public administration or a law degree. I would have a PhD in history because I revere history. And I cannot claim to be knowledgeable about all the knowledge of the great state of Idaho or the great state of Oregon or Chief Joseph. All I will say is what I think of the first people, the Native people, the Indian people, when I started to become aware of Oregon, my Oregon, when I was, I never really heard of Oregon until I was in law school my third year, and then I only had a week to hear of it and get out here. It was that remarkable. I have to say, I want to be careful how I say this. When I think of Oregon, one of the first things said to me, oh, that's the land of Chief Joseph, was said to me when I was in law school that day when people said, what? He says, Chief Joseph, from this day forward, I will fight no more. And it was what Chief Joseph I've heard of. And so maybe it was the Oregon Territory, which at that time was, I think, bigger than Washington in the whole area. But I want to say Oregon and Chief Joseph were very significantly connected for me. And now, emotionally, I'm just being very frank with you. I'm not trying to be melodramatic. I'm not trying to upstage the governor of the great state of Idaho. I don't even know. I have immense respect for Idaho and her people and for this part of the world. But I really do mean this. I do feel that Chief Joseph and Oregon were extraordinarily, teacher was a major part of this people, the people in our history, in our world. If the Idaho also wanted to claim him, well, he may be the first person back there with two statues. And all I can say is maybe, I know his contribution was great, and maybe it was that great. So I'm not trying to mess around here. I'm struggling trying to answer your question because I want to be respectful. The letter really caught me by surprise. It was brought to me yesterday. It stunned me. I can't do any more than that. And you all know, can I just say something about you?
If you wish.
Well, I don't want to, you know what I'm going to say.
I do.
You know what I'm going to say.
Yes.
You do know who sits on your committee, right? You do know that you're extremely blessed and fortunate to have a direct descendant of Chief Joseph on this committee. And he brought that word to me last session with tears in his eyes, is he laid out the work of Kerry Tumchuk, who had researched it for months and months and months, is the head of the organization. Oregon Historical Society of Chief Joseph and his bloodlines to the honorable historic figure, Senator Ted Ferrioli. So this is not some light thing we're talking about. I'm trying to be very respectful. I'm trying to be very careful. And I won't say there were tears in his eyes or in his voice, but he showed me the scrawl which they laid out, which it was very long. And it was the history, the family history of one Ted Ferrioli. And up in this corner, I'll never forget it, was Chief Joseph. So all I'm going to say is I'm trying to the best I can to answer your question, Your Honor, but also show that I think you can make a very strong statement that Chief Joseph, an extraordinary person he was, and a family head, is very much connected to Oregon, my Oregon. And so I don't know what else to do about that letter than to say that. It's a public record. I'm probably going to hear about this from Idaho. But I'm not ashamed of what I said. I think it's an accurate statement. I think it's an honest statement. I think it's a historic statement that is. I can say from a sense of history, there is a significant connection to Chief Joseph in the great state of Oregon and the Oregon Territory. That's the best I can do. I don't know what else to do.
Madam Chairman, if I could, as Executive Director of the Oregon Historical Society, and as Senator Ferrioli knows, Chief Joseph's ancestral homelands were in Oregon. He spent much of the last half of his life fighting to get back to Oregon. He was in Idaho and other places at the time. The only reason he was not in Oregon was because the federal government did not allow him to come back to Oregon. And he spent a great deal of his life fighting to come back to his ancestral homeland and was not allowed to. So I think he clearly is an Oregonian, as Senator Courtney has said.
So. And if I may say, Chair, and someone should instruct the director of the Oregon Historical Society that he could have saved me a lot of embarrassment. This microphone started to speak a lot sooner than he just did. So. I just want to make that on the record, too. So.
Madam Chair.
Thank you for that clarification. Yes, Senator Ferrioli.
Mr. President, Mr. Tumchuk, timing is everything. I think you've done this just exactly the way you
Thank
should
you,
have
sir.
Done it. So. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, any other questions for Senator Courtney? Okay, Senator Courtney, thank you very much for overcoming your case of nerves and joining us today. We're very glad always to have you and hope you'll be back again. Okay, so next I see that we've been joined by another one of our colleagues, Representative Brent Barton is here. Would you like to come forward?
Thank you. Madam Chair, may I join by Mayor Dealey and Lawrence?
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brent Barton. I represent Oregon House District 40, which includes Oregon City. And Madam Chair and my colleagues, Dr. John McLaughlin is a big deal in Oregon City. And I come here, or as we call him in Oregon City, Dr. John McLaughlin, I come here respectfully. I did not have the opportunity to appear in front of the commission. That is entirely my fault. I really appreciate the work that they have done and invested in this. But with greatest respect, we rise in defense of Dr. John McLaughlin and his place in Oregon history. And indeed, the good doctor is not just an abstraction for us in Oregon City. It is a very real thing, and indeed, his memory is vital to our economy. For example, Chair Rosenbaum, should you ever come and visit Willamette Falls, which you'll soon have the opportunity to do in Oregon City, you'll come via McLaughlin Boulevard. And while there, perhaps you will visit McLaughlin House, one of our primary tourist attractions, or you'll go and see the falls, where there's currently a bust of Dr. John McLaughlin looking out over the falls, our single biggest tourist attraction in Oregon City. You might also walk between the two places along McLaughlin Promenade, and while there, you might eat at one of our various local businesses. Dr. John McLaughlin and his legacy and his memory really are vital to our economy, and as such, I appreciate your consideration of this. I'm joined today by two former mayors of Oregon City, former Mayor Alice Norris and former Mayor Doug Neely, who will be appearing to you, I want to make it clear for the record, as Dr. John McLaughlin. He looks the part, he will be speaking in character, and he is actually in costume loaned by the federal government, which oversees the McLaughlin House. And as such, he will be using, in fact, the good doctor's own words, and it is requirement for his costume that he actually remain in character. Which I think it might be interesting if you asked him really hard questions, see how he handles it. Having said that, thank you for accommodating us, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
I appreciate the opportunity of speaking. I don't know how to take the introduction. I've been referred to by many people as many things. I've never been called a big deal. So I don't know how to whether I should take that with the front or not. But from 1824, when I came to the Oregon Territory...
Excuse me, and I'm sorry to interrupt. We do need you to identify yourself before you testify.
I was hoping that his introduction would have sufficed.
We need you to say it.
I'm Doug Neely, and from this point on, I am taking the persona of Dr. McLaughlin in his time.
Thank you.
From 1824, when I first came to the Oregon Territory, to the present hour, I have spared neither time nor means, but literally used to facilitate the settling of Oregon. It has been my good fortune to have done, in the years gone by, much to relieve the distress and promote the comfort and the happiness of the immigrants. Do you think the first settlers would have been able to settle the territory without my assistance? And I might add with equal confidence that this country was more easily reclaimed from the Indians and settled by the whites, and with less loss of life than in any new territory in the United States. By British demagogues, I have been represented as a traitor. For what? Because I acted as a Christian, saved American citizens, men, women, and children, and enabled them to make farms to sustain their families. To be brief, I founded this settlement and prevented a war between Great Britain and the United States, and for doing this peacefully and quietly, I was treated by the British in such a manner. Then from self-respect, I resigned my situation in the Hudson's Bay Company, by which I sacrificed $12,000 per annum. I can truly feel that my day and my generation, I have done something to advance the cause of civilization, freedom, and true progress.
Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. McLaughlin. I'm Alice Norris, and I come to advocate for the retention of Dr. John McLaughlin, a major figure and a key figure in the development of Oregon. He was the first governor of Oregon. How do I know? Because the 1957 legislature declared it. And if the legislature declared it, it must be so. And when the 1957 Oregon legislature declared that Dr. John McLaughlin, the father of Oregon, on the 100th anniversary of his death, they also said Dr. John McLaughlin was the undisputed governor of a territory 2.5 times the size of Texas. They declared him the first governor of Oregon. Hatfield McCall never presided over an area so vast. He was our first industrialist. His grist mill in 1841 was the catalyst mill that led to Oregon's reputation as the birthplace of industry in the American West. Did any of the four nominees work so directly in economic development? He was a model of diversity. His wife was half Native American. Hatfield was a dove in Congress, but did he directly avert war with England, as did Dr. McLaughlin? For many years, he was the only medical provider in the Oregon country. He invented the Oregon Country Health Plan as the first doctor, planted apples at his fort to keep the other doctors away, and gave affordable health care, single provider, single payer, years before Blue Cross. He has been given a few honorary titles: King of Old Oregon, Emperor of the West, King of the Columbia, Savior of Oregon, and Great White Eagle. He's also suffered multiple insults. First, from his employer, Hudson's Bay Company, who censored him and fired him for giving aid to the immigrants coming across the Oregon Trail. His direct humanitarian aid saved many lives and created a population base that made us all Americans and not Brits. He settled in the new United States, founded Oregon City, and I assure you I'm totally unbiased because of that. Became an American citizen, was elected mayor of Oregon City. So we have three mayors appearing here today. Then had all his property confiscated before he died. And further insult, he has had to stand in Statuary Hall near that egregious villain, Jason Lee, who tried to discredit the good doctor and was one of the ringleaders in taking Dr. McLaughlin's property away from him. The state of Oregon did release the property to his heirs in 1852, 5 years after he died. And in 1907, the Oregon Historical Society president, Frederick Holman, gave the following eulogy at the dedication of the McLaughlin Institute in Oregon City. I shall merely mention that conspirators against Dr. McLaughlin took for themselves parts of his land claim and, by means of malicious misstatements, caused Congress unjustly to deprive him of all the rest of his land claim, and thus humbled and humiliated and impoverished the grand, noble, generous father of Oregon. Let's not add insult to injury and remove this fine role model and father of Oregon from his pedestal in Washington, D.C. I know I was. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, and certainly we appreciate these comments.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Ferriola.
I have a question for the assembled mayors and representative. Would the good doctor not find a home today in Oregon City?
Chair Rosenbaum and Vice Chair Ferrioli, well, that in part depends on this legislature and whether or not we are going to fund the redevelopment of the Blue Heron site at the Willamette Falls.
Wow. Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Senator Ferrioli.
I'm a yes.
I know nothing of the Blue Heron site, but that, of course, is my house was located right near the falls. Yeah. You realize that. So I did have a home in Oregon.
There you go.
Senator Boquist.
I just think that, you know, we have two statues. There's a house in the Senate. We can leave them right here in the Capitol. We can move from one Capitol to the next Capitol.
Uh-huh. There you go.
That's a good
okay,
point.
Anybody else? Okay. Thank you all for your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum.
Thank you.
And I think next we'll call three people, Aaron Iyer, Janet Deisinger, and Kay Bridges, if the three of you would like to come forward. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee, and thank you for waiting so patiently. Whoever wants to go first, please go ahead.
I go first. I'm Kay Bridges from Portland, Oregon. Grew up, born in Delaware, grew up in Maryland, though. Chair Rosenbaum and committee. The history I'm hearing today brings me a lot of smiles as well. When I was in school in Maryland, I went to Annapolis many times, to the Naval Academy, Fort McHenry, Washington, D.C., and I got to go back after 62 years last year. And to go to the places I had been as a child and see the same things was extremely important to me. 2 years before that, I got to do something else. I want to give a different perspective of what history can mean. My grandfather was born in Scotland, and I'd lost everything taking care of my mom at home 24/7, but my daughter says, "You want to go to Scotland, Mom?" And I jumped at the chance. And I was actually go to Google Earth and see the street that my grandfather lived on. His uncle lived two blocks away, but I couldn't tell what part of that street. But that street was only two blocks long, and there were walls that were there 200 years ago. So history is particularly important to me, and to be able to walk that street was such a memory that I just can't even begin to help you understand. When I came to Oregon in 52, 16 years old, went to high school in Newburgh, and realized that when I said I rode 20 miles on a school bus to school, they said, "You're a liar. Everybody knows that the East Coast is just one big city." That's in 1952, for heaven's sakes. It was built of history. And I got to go back after 62 years and see things. The farm that I'd raised my Holstein heifer on was now a winery, and I got to walk up the driveway, the same one. And to me, the Jason Lee statue here, we have one. How many of you in this room, committee and the people attending today, have been by the statue right here on the Capitol grounds? I keep posting that picture every time I hear something about taking the statue out of D.C. We already have one here. Let's leave the one in D.C. To me, it's tradition. Walking in the Jefferson Monument. My grandma was a Jefferson, her family. Her mother's name was Jefferson, maiden name. I can't tell you how I felt when I came to Oregon, and I knew more about the Tillamook burn than the kids I went to school with, and we never took one single trip to the state capitol in 3 years in that high school. I am so happy to hear people talking about history today, but I pray you will vote to leave the statues that have been there as long as they have there to perpetuate that history, because my grandkids, I don't have any great-grandkids yet. They haven't decided to do that. I want them to see the things as they are, and I want to be able to take them back to D.C. to see the same things that have been there for a long time. I was always disappointed that Oregon did not seem to respect their history. I hear the respect today, but it's a different type. It's not generational, believe me. It is perpetual. And I pray that you will vote to keep the statue there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good afternoon. I'm Janice Steisinger, Chair Rosenbaum, and committee members. I want to thank you for hearing me today. We came several times before to talk about Jason Lee Memorial being changed out from the Statuary Hall. That was in House Bill 2387 in 2013, and in 2014, Senate Bill, pardon me, I believe it was House Bill 4071. And there's an awful lot of testimony, and I'd link that in my comments to you so that you could see the number of people that came at that time. There are a lot of people, as you noted in your testimony, Senator Ferrioli, about that have such strong opinions about all of this. And it's wonderful to look back at the history of all of it. It really is. I was especially touched by all of the people, not only Jason Lee, but all of the people surrounding him, and how he was called to be here. The Native Nez Perce Indians called him to come, and the effect he had on the area. And in 1906, the Oregon Historical Society recognized his great contribution and said he brought the seeds of civilization to the area. And White Swan, Chief White Swan, testified at that time about how he brought peace as well. And it was different in Oregon. So there's just a, I just was very excited to learn about that wonderful history, and I hope that more people can learn about it. I'm distressed to see in this bill that's before us an emergency clause. I think it's very disturbing after all of the many people who have come and testified to you that they wanted to keep Jason Lee to have an emergency clause put up on this bill. And I would ask you to please remove it. And I would offer something else. Would you please, if you're determined to replace one of the statues, please keep Jason Lee there. And I would ask you to put a referendum to the people rather than an emergency clause and let them choose whether they want it replaced, one of the statues replaced, which one, and whom they would replace it with. Because this should be a voice of all of the people of Oregon, and it will be a great chance for us to discuss our history over the next 6 months, 8 months. And I think that would be a great exercise for our state. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senate committee members, thank you for the opportunity to share. I believe this is my seventh time regarding this issue in replacing the Jason Lee and now the John McLaughlin statue, these living memorials. And I'm here because I discovered the statue of Jason Lee back in April 16th, 2007 at a rally. And I had no idea who Jason Lee was. Didn't care, had no interest really in history. But I'm a native Oregonian, and one thing led to another.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you do need to say your name.
Oh, yes. Aaron Auer. And when I realized that he is the true father, founding father of Oregon, similar as the Nation of Israel's founding father, Father Abraham, America's founding father, George Washington, well, Jason Lee is truly the father of Oregon, in that when he came, and you know, sitting in, I've been in three of the meetings to testify with the commission, and it was never brought up that the reason Jason Lee came was because the Indians and Hehokasteakan of the Nez Perce tribe, prior, before Chief Joseph, walked nearly 3,000 miles to find the Book of Heaven, the Bible, the scriptures, because Creator had been given dreams and visions to many natives about a book because of their heart's desire for the truth, and we all need the book. So when they showed up unannounced at the doorstep of General Clark from Lewis and Clark Expedition, you can imagine the intense interest, and it was circulated, his farewell speech, and it's been shared here before in these hearings and testimonies, and normally I have my treasure box of books and documentation. I just felt today just not to bring it. But when this was told to the nation, they handpicked its finest. That man's name was Jason Lee. They sent him, the nation did. Not, you couldn't find a more pure vessel to bring the message that the Indians sought. And in that, the establishment of the education of Oregon, which became Willamette University, he's the founding father of it. The governmental roots, the forming of the provisional government there at Shampooey, that historic vote, well, on July 5th, he led up, he helped, he was the chairman that swore them all in, those first organic law. And here in the bill where it says, whereas these statues of Jason Lee, who was a leader in the organization of the territorial government of Oregon, the territorial government wasn't until 1849. He passed Jason Lee in 1845, some 4 or 5 years prior to that. We need to make sure we get these things the way they were, and accuracy, and to preserve that, like it says here, Proverbs 22:28, remove not the ancient landmark which thy fathers have set. And if we remove landmarks, then we're removing boundaries, and we must have boundaries. And he is our identity, not just for the Christian heritage of the work of the Lord that was started, but the educational roots, the governmental roots, and the testimonies that we found from former governors of Oregon, which we've been quoting. I've been to every county of Oregon, 2009, and met a vice chair, Senator Farioli, there in the Dalles, where they have a pulpit rock and where the testimony of Chief Whiteswan came from that was referred to. We've read these things. So it's deep, bedrock, rooted, founded in the knowledge of Jason Lee, and that's how I discovered these things, was from that mighty living memorial, because these things are so important statues. The first one I can find that was established was by the Lord, when the Lord says, remember Lot's wife. And she was turned into a pillar of salt. Not of bronze or silver or marble, but of salt as a memorial to remember. So these choices that is presented before you and others, and really it should be the whole state of Oregon, but it is very important, and I believe there's a simplistic way to do this. I don't believe this is a complex issue, because we can honor all men and women without replacing and removing our heritage and our real identity. I have a proposal. What if we were able to leave Jason Lee his statue in Statuary Hall to represent the whole Pacific Northwest, the old Oregon country, because as referred to Idaho, see, the old Oregon country was now the state of Oregon, Washington, Idaho, some of Montana and Wyoming. What a wonderful representative for the whole Pacific Northwest, because he's a national treasure to the nation, opening up the way, the migration of the Oregon Trail was Jason Lee petitioning for statehood. That's why he has both Bible and petition in hand, to do what's right for your fellow man with what saith the Scripture and what saith the Constitution. And you won't find a pure man that did not villainize John McLaughlin. They worked together, really. Even though John McLaughlin, you know, worked to oppose the vote at Shampooey, but the leadership of Jason Lee and these pioneers of faith, we must preserve them at all cost. And yes, remove not again the ancient landmark which thy fathers have set. So there's much to say. I appreciate you giving us more than 2 minutes. Thank you for that. But I do have one question to go along with Janice's mention of this emergency that's declared. And if someone could answer this for me and for us and all Oregonians, it would be greatly appreciative. This 2015 Act being necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, and safety, an emergency is declared to exist. Could someone help me understand how there's an emergency here for the public's safety, peace, and health by removing and replacing our statues that represent us to the nation?
Does that complete your testimony, or did you have more testimony?
I'll be respectful and not go any further, because there's much more we could share. But if someone could respond to that, I will close my testimony at that.
Okay, because we do have other people to testify to. So, okay. Well, thank you all very much for your testimony. I don't see any questions for you.
God bless you all. Thank you very much.
And I will call Fred Neal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Fred Neal. I'm chair of the Oregon State Capitol Foundation. The bill 942 does name us as the responsible party to undertake the task of finding sculptors and having the statues produced and the extant ones into Statuary Hall brought home. And I say brought home. I think that they're welcome home, and they've done a good job where they are. As you know, per your charge in ORS 173-500, are responsible for assisting you with the Oregon State Capitol, not the United States Capitol. And as I've said in my previous testimony on House Bill 2037, we're just now beginning a development process where we can methodically and effectively raise funds for any effort, certainly the efforts we now undertake on behalf of this Capitol. But we have no staff. We have a development contractor who's helping us develop a very nascent, not yet quite rolled out development program. And so we're not prepared to undertake this task. We're happy. We respect what the commission has done, Dr. Flood, and Mr. Timchuk. I think they've done a great job as a member of the Historical Society and someone who also is concerned with all of this great state's history and its pre-state history. I respect the decision that was made. I was able to vote online and appreciated that opportunity. I was not able to make any of their hearings, nor did I have any predisposition to who should star in Statuary Hall, which I think is a wonderful, wonderful place. I might also point out to you that we do have at this Capitol on the grounds opposite each other, as they often were in life, Dr. Lee and Factor McLaughlin on our grounds. They're in bronze, and they're home here. We're happy to participate in a working group, should you designate one, to see how this might proceed. But we are quite unprepared to be the lead player, with all due respect. We will do what you tell us to, but that's our job. But if you assign us this task, you're asking us to, it will take us a good while to get organized and to succeed.
So, and just looking at the way this is drafted, it does say in consultation with the Oregon Historical Society, and then this idea of a working group has been talked about quite a bit today. I don't know if that would alleviate any of your concerns.
Madam Chair, it doesn't help us raise the money. As much as we admire and respect Mr. Timchuk's valiant efforts to preserve the Oregon Historical Society and make it
Any questions for Mr. Neal?
Madam Chair, may I?
Yes, go ahead.
So, Mr. Neal, I am absolutely familiar with the angst with which you might look at accepting the assignment, which clearly you are not volunteering to do. But I'm also thinking that it's possibly a wonderful opportunity. So, you know, if I could just get you to talk about the opportunity cost of this.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, it's attractive as an opportunity. It's certainly, we do care about history, and I have some personal affinity for both of the new named beneficiaries of the honorees of the statutes. But my membership has made it clear to me that we are not prepared to undertake it, and we are all volunteers, from Representative Gilliam to former Senator Vern Duncan to former Chair Jane Cease and a former Executive Assistant to Governor Jerry Thompson. Our sentiment is, don't do this, Fred. We're not ready, and we are just volunteers. So that's the issue. I can see it's a great opportunity. Were we already prepared to reach out to new audiences and the like, but we're not there yet. I hope to be, and you'll certainly be hearing from us individually and as a group in the coming months about how we propose to develop this development program successfully, but it is quite nascent, and you want to act on this now, and we're not prepared to.
So, Madam Chair, I guess the my next question is, would you be prepared to continue to function in an advisory role to whatever lucky organization that is designated as the lead organization for this vigorous, demanding project?
Madam Chair, Senator Perioli, of course we would. We think that both Dr. Lee and Mr. McLaughlin deserve a role in how we translate this building's history and this state's history to visitors to the Capitol, and would be happy to serve an advisory role with whatever entity is charged with this in order to ensure that upon their return there's a respectful incorporation of their history into the History Center here at the Capitol.
And Madam Chair, if I might be so bold as to ask if Mr. Neal is ready to press his nomination of the Oregon Historical Society as the lead
agency. Madam Chair, Senator Perioli, Mr. Timchuk's done a marvelous job at preserving the Historical Society, but it is still quite recently until his ascension, if you will, was at risk. And I understand his reticence to undertake it, and I would not, as the Capitol Foundation is not prepared to suggest that the Historical Society also either take on this responsibility.
Well,
if they're unprepared,
I simply regard that as another missed opportunity for Mr. Neal to toss his colleague under the bus, so to speak.
Mr. Timchuk, did you have anything you wanted to say at this
in your own defense?
Well, just that. We are a 501c3, of course, a nonprofit. If you were to ask us to do something, of course, we would do our best. I don't think you can order us to do anything because we are a separate institution. We do receive some state funding, which we're very grateful for. And the governor has put us in the budget this year, and Governor Brown has indicated her support to me that she would like to see that increased, and has sent that message to the Senate Ways and Means Committee. I had my development director estimate the costs of what this would involve to take this project, including time of a staffer and a printing and the fundraising, and you can get numbers pretty quickly. And to ask us to do that without providing the funds would be something that would be pretty tough to do. And if you're providing us the funds to do it, then those funds could just as easily be going to the project as well. It's kind of a catch-22 situation. I think there's a creative solution out there, and would appreciate the opportunity to continue to talk with the senators as we talk about this further. So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
And again, Senator Farrelly, some of our members, we're a membership organization, OHS. We were agnostic in this issue. Just at the governor's request, I served as the staff to the commission. We did not take a role in it. Many of our members support it. Many of our members do not, and we're for our members.
I feel your pain. There was a question.
Did you have a question?
Madam Chair, as the Vice Chair of Revenue and Finance, I see a former military officer and understanding history, as does Mr. Timchuk here. I mean, during the Lend-Lease program of World War II, we were able to do all kinds of miraculous things, and it would strike me right off the bat that we might be able to get the governor of Idaho to ante $4 million, and we'll put it in for the first 25 years, and then we will lease it and lend it to the state of Idaho for 25 years, and therefore he has put forth his opportunity. I'm more than willing to pen the letter going back to him if he wants to put up the money.
Madam Chair, I think you should make the offer. We should cast two or bronze plaques, so that those could be interchanged at great cost efficiency in 25 years.
And Madam Chairman and Vice Chair, if I could suggest, I might suggest that perhaps the legislative research folks here might be asked to research from other states what the actual costs were of the statues. Eight or nine statues have gone back since the Congress passed the law in 2000, allowing for the replacement. Would be interesting to know what their costs were, so we can get a better example of how much money we're going to need to raise.
And Madam Chair, how they were funded and
correct,
which organizations were lead organizations.
Okay, we don't have the staff to do that. Perhaps the legislative research might be able to look into that for the senators.
Madam Chair, between you and I am looking at legislative research.
Sounds like it.
I'm the Vice Chair of Revenue. Don't be talking about this.
Carrie, were there any other organizations contemplated when the group was looking at who could, where this could be housed?
For us, no, we weren't, the commission was not given that,
no,
that charge or responsibility to study where, how to pay for it.
Okay. Okay, well then, I don't see any more questions for you two, so we'll thank you both for your testimony, and we're just in a public hearing. I don't think we're quite ready to.
Madam Chair, then I would enjoy a hallway conversation. We're not ready to move the bill.
Sure. Did you want to recess then?
It might help, but I don't think that it will resolve all the issues. But I just want to share a piece of information.
Sure. Okay. Well, recess. Committee will be in recess. And so, members, as I said before, we were just in a public hearing, and I don't think we do need to start some of this research that we talked about. I think we can rely on the resources that we have here to begin that process, and we're not ready to move this today.
Madam Chair, I think what I heard the last panel offer was their expertise in helping to identify perhaps what a lead agency might look like. So I think that would serve to fulfill their duty to the history of the state of Oregon, and perhaps.
And I would call your attention again to Mr. Kyle Jensen over there, who is outstanding as head of the Oregon Heritage Commission, and he's got a knowledge of these issues as well, and might offer.
So that sounds like a work group.
Great, something to work on. Did you want to add something, Senator?
Yes, I'm sure I do want to add something. And I think we have a fine committee administrator and a great legislative council, and I think there's ways for whatever decision we decide to come to, because obviously there's been a lot of public input. I think that portion of the decision is there, but there's also ways to make this, implementate this fast, move quickly without an emergency clause.
Okay, Senator Boquist, thanks for your comment. I'm going to close the
Madam Chair, before you do, as you heard, it is incumbent on me to announce that I have a possible it would be a conflict of interest. And the nature of the conflict is that I am a distant relative of old Chief Joseph, who was the father of Maria Joseph, who was the sister of Bear Claws, who was married to Joseph Gale, the other first governor of the state of Oregon. So I didn't want to get in a dust-up about first governors, because we had three contenders in the room at the same time. But, Madam Chair, just to note that for the record.
Okay, we'll note that for the record. Thank you, Senator Farrioli. And I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 942. Nothing further to come before us today. Members, we're adjourned. Members, we're adjourned. Before us.